MikeCram.com.
Welcome to another MikeCram COVID-19 update as we look at our Johns Hopkins coronavirus tracker. We can see where the infections are in the world, and recently they've updated this to actually show a little bit more in terms of location, so you can actually look and zoom in. As you can see that the number of cases are starting to rise quite precipitously. I want to highlight this free app called the COVID-19 Tracker that was developed by a retired OBGYN physician in Florida and his team of developers at a company called HealthLinked. To look for additional trends and clusters of cases, they've created a platform for users to report if they have COVID-19-like symptoms and if they've been tested for it. As you can see, this app has already become one of the most popular medical apps, and as testing availability and challenges continue in the United States and other countries, apps like this could be a helpful tracking tool for hospitals and communities. It's finally time to talk about immunity, and this is a complicated topic, so we're going to go through it fairly slowly but at a rapid pace, as you'll see. So the question is, in this situation, is the patient testing falsely negative because of these poor sensitivities on these reverse transcriptase PCRs, or is the patient really becoming infected again? There was a non-peer-reviewed article that recently put some of those questions to answer. This article set out trying to determine whether or not an infection with the COVID-19 disease with the SARS-CoV-2 virus conferred immunity to the host for repeated infections afterwards. Now let's go over what they did. And I want to let you know that this does involve animal research, in this case rhesus monkeys, which are fairly close to us in terms of genetics. They took four rhesus monkeys and they infected all four of them with the SARS-CoV-2 virus. All of them had similar symptoms, the symptoms and signs that you would imagine. They lost a little bit of weight. They showed signs and symptoms of the virus. Furthermore, they checked viral loads using that reverse transcriptase PCR that we talked about. And those peaked at about 3 days in all of the monkeys. Of note, they checked not only the nasopharyngeal swabs, but they also did anal swabs to make sure that they had checked for viral shedding in both places. And the peak was around 3 days after the initial infection. They sacrificed one of the animals, and after evaluating the monkey, they went to go look to see exactly where the virus ended up in that body. They were able to see that the virus was in the nose, pharynx, which is the mouth, lungs, which is where most of the virus hung out, the gut, spinal cord, the heart, skeletal muscle, and the bladder. Then what they did in the remaining three monkeys is they measured antibodies at day 14, at day 21, and at day 28. And what they saw in those three remaining monkeys were all of the things that you would notice to see if someone had immunity, which was basically there were increasing signs of antibodies being made, showing that these monkeys were recovering from the initial infection of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Of note, they looked at the chest x-rays on day 28, and the chest x-rays were negative. They were essentially normal at that point. The other thing that they did was check the viral load at that time as well, using reverse transcriptase PCR, and in all of them, the viral load were all negative. So at day 28, we essentially have recovered primates without a abnormal chest x-ray and with undetectable viral load. What they did on day 28 was they reinfected the remaining three monkeys and monitored them. Other than an initial spike in temperature in all three of them, they showed none of the signs that they had back here with the weight loss and the signs and symptoms that you would expect with a viral infection. None of those signs were present other than a very small spike in body temperature, which quickly went away. And after about 5 days, they sacrificed one of these animals and looked to see if there was any kind of abnormality or virus anywhere. And they looked in all three of these a total of 96 times to see if there was any virus, any viral load using RT-PCR. And the answer in every single case was none. When they looked at that sacrifice monkey after 5 days, they showed that there was no viral replication in all tissues, as well as no pathological damage and viral antigen in lung tissues. They go on to say, therefore, our results suggested that the monkeys with SARS-CoV-2 infection after recovery could not be reinfected with the same strain. Longitudinally, the monkey that had undergone single infection in this study did not appear to show signs of recurrence after the recovery either. Taken together, the team concludes, our results indicated that the primary SARS-CoV-2 infection could protect from subsequent exposures, which have vital implications for vaccine design and disease prognosis. Which is not to say that it would be unusual to have multiple infections of the same virus. This was documented several times in his report on the epidemic of smallpox in Trinidad from 1902 to 1904. On page 83, Dr. Schwelt talks about second attacks. The possibility of second attacks was recognized as far back as the 10th century by Rhazes, the Arabian Galen, and his experience has been confirmed by many observers up to the present day. He goes through and actually documents in several patients that he attended to in Trinidad on people who had multiple bouts of smallpox, even some that have been vaccinated successfully. And who is the author? Dr. Marie-Francois Raoul Schwelt, who happens to be my great-granduncle. He was the top surgeon in the Colonial Hospital in Port of Spain, Trinidad. Despite this, though, reinfection is a rare thing. And so, in this case, in the SARS-CoV-2 situation, it seems as though the virus follows what we normally would see, which is if there isn't that much of a change in the virus, hosts develop immunity to it. And so if that's the case, can we have blood tests quickly that would check for antibodies? It could be very helpful if we could check for antibodies because we could see who was actually infected, how widespread is the infection, and if it is widespread enough, you might be able to actually, at 50, 60, even 70%, get into herd immunity where the virus would not spread as fast and you would not have to do isolation. In addition to that, you wouldn't have to worry about personal protective equipment in healthcare providers who already have antibodies because they wouldn't be able to get the disease again. Here's an article that was published in a Science that looks for new blood tests, and they basically go over the same things that we've been talking about. Companies have been racing to develop antibody tests. Here's one out of Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. They posted a preprint yesterday describing a SARS-CoV-2 antibody test that they've developed. It's a relatively simple procedure, and other labs could easily scale it up. And then they go on to describe exactly what we've talked about, where they find this spike protein on the outer coat to see whether or not it will bind to antibodies if they're there. And if they do bind to these receptor binding domains, as we talked about, then it would trigger a detection so that you could see whether or not the antibodies are there. Here's another antibody test, Biomedomics, who's still seeking FDA approval on this COVID-19 rapid diagnostic test. And you can see here that it's fairly simple. We'll put a link into the description below regarding this. But in terms of the sensitivity and specificity, let's take a look at that. This was published in the Journal of Medical Virology. The development and clinical application of a rapid IgM, remember we talked about IgM being in the acute phase and IgG being in the more chronic phase, combined antibody tests for SARS-CoV-2 infection diagnosis. The overall testing sensitivity was 88.66%, meaning that if you had a negative test, you could be 88.66% sure that that was not a false negative result. Additionally, specificity was 90.63%. That means that if the test was positive, there's a 90.63% chance of it being a true positive. Again, high sensitivity means that if it's negative, you can rule out. High specificity means that if it's positive, you can rule in. And in both cases here, we've got good results. So we hope that this test gets FDA approved soon so that we're able to do antibody testing to see who has had the disease already and may not have known it. That'll give us an idea about herd immunity and how fast this virus is going to continue to spread. Remember that if 50 to 60% of the people in a community already have tested positive for the virus, it's very difficult for that virus to spread much more. Also, healthcare workers can be tested, and if they're positive and have already had the disease, then that could potentially save equipment for those that have not yet tested positive. Well, we went over a lot of things today. I would offer you a couple of reminders for those healthcare providers that want a refresher course or to learn it for the first time. Don't forget to go to medcram.com for our free course on updating and learning about ventilator management. I hope to, over the next number of days this week, go over practical things that we can do to improve our immunity as this virus continues to spread throughout our community. Thanks for joining us.
What's your opinions on China? I've had General Spalding here, who's a general in the Air Force, and he went in.
You know what he did.
I don't know him personally, but I know. He did some work on China, and he came here, and he held nothing back on China, nothing. He talked about 5G's effects and what they're trying to do with Made in China 2025, how they want to take over the world, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there was no filtering there. What are your thoughts on China?
I think that we are exaggerating. Let me tell you, I'm 70 years old, so I remember when I was in my 20s, articles in all the news media that the Japanese model is going to take over the whole world, even a country of 100 million people, how they're going to take over the whole world. And the Japanese model, their industrial system is far superior to us. You read anything like that in the last 30 years? No. Why? The Japanese model had deep problems with it. So does the Chinese model. Do you know what the Chinese have? They have a highly educated technocracy. Very well, very gifted scientists, very smart people. And they're good business people. And they've collected a lot of money. They got $1.5 billion, most of our dollars in their sovereign wealth fund, mm-hmm. Okay? You know what they have that we have that they don't have? Hmm. We have very strong, highly functional, resilient institutions. You know what makes a society, and this is what I teach in my courses, what's the difference between a poor country and a rich country? It's not they have riches in the rich country. So they have institutions that produce wealth. The Chinese have weak and corrupted institutions. They're trying to fix them. You know how many law schools there were in 1980 in China? Four. They had 2,000 lawyers in the whole country. You cannot have a modern economy without a legal system. No rule of law, no economy. You have to have a rule of law. Okay? Milton Friedman assumed when the Soviet Union collapsed that all they had to do was free the markets up and everything would be great. At the end of the 1990s, he was at the Cato Institute, a libertarian institute, mm-hmm. He said, we made a terrible mistake. No rule of law, no economic growth. And there's a whole school of institutional economics that say that. The Chinese have profound dysfunctions in their system, which we are not seeing. We're creating a threat. Is there a threat? Yes, there is. We need to deal with it. We're seeing it in the pharmaceutical industry. We need to directly address it. But let's not make some mythological, powerful figure out there of a country when, in fact, they have deep internal problems. And they, by the way, they recognize it. If you talk to Chinese privately, they'll tell you it. If you go on, I don't read Mandarin Chinese, but some of my friends do. They said, you should see the rage of the Chinese people against their own government. It's unbelievable. They're saying things they would never say in a totalitarian or autocratic system because of the level of anger. They believe the government lied to them. They believe that they knew about this. It was going on for 2 months before they did anything. And they're very, very, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of fear in the Chinese government of an uprising in China, like they had in Tiananmen Square. It wasn't, by the way, just Tiananmen Square in 1979 when there was an uprising in China. It was across the country. The center of it was in mm-hmm. Beijing. They're afraid of that happening again. There have been four shocks to China in the last year. This is the fourth one. They had this shock with the African swine flu. Pork prices are up, which is the principal source of protein there. 130-140% rise in prices in China. That upset people a lot. You know, there are huge price increases before Tiananmen Square. That's one of the things that drove it. in 1979, the uprising in China. Same thing's happening now with price increases. And you have a lot of money being spent to keep factories producing things that no one wants. Why are they doing that? Because they're afraid of unemployment causing social unrest in the country. So they have a lot of internal problems, but we do need to understand they've been manipulating the international system against us. And the Russians are doing the same thing. They're using social media to defeat us, and we need to be more aware of it. Half of the anti-vaccine movement is coming from Russia, from these Autobots. They're attempting to turn Americans
the social media misinformation campaign.
That's exactly what it is. They're running around saying the U.S. military planted this virus in China. That's a bold-faced lie. It's absolutely outrageous. Why are they doing it? They're trying to deflect attention from their own failures in the early stages of this. Now, did they act later? Yes, they did, but the thing was loose for 2 months. What were they doing those 2 months? Nothing. They're suppressing the information. Mm-hmm. A democracy cannot suppress information because free press, free associations, civil society, all of our institutions just don't permit it. You cannot suppress information in a democracy.
I don't trust any country that is ran on a one-party system where there's no free press or free speech, where the country controls the data. I don't trust any of it. China's been saying their unemployment's been between 2.8% to 3.2% the last 30 years. You're out of your mind to say you're employing 1.5 billion people and only 3% of them don't have jobs. So. You're saying 12 to 18 months, 25, he's saying 12 to 18 months.
Yep. And I agree with that. And I think that's extremely aggressive because of the phases.
It is extremely aggressive?
Well, it is.
Even 12 to 18 months?
Yes. It is.
Okay, but let's just say they can pull it off because Trump's going to put pressure on them and they're going to do 12 to 18 months. Okay, fine. At what point do you think, best case scenario, we'll have it ready that if we have a million cases, we can give a million people vaccines? Could that be 12 months from now?
You don't give it to them when they have the... You give it to them before they get sick.
So at
like a flu shot, you get it when the season's coming.
So at some point...
So then that means you have to give it to 100 million people. It's not like
correct.
You're giving it to a million.
That's
well, let me put a perspective on it. So some point in this development of phase one, phase two, phase three, there could be some point in a phase through... three area where we're beginning to see that we're not seeing untoward side effects or safety issues, and we're seeing some evidence that's effective. There could be a point before it's actually licensed if everybody, the scientific community, it would come to a conclusion that maybe this vaccine we can go ahead and begin to use it before it gets FDA licensed under what's called an emergency use authorization, because there is growing evidence and sufficient data that would warrant its safety and efficacy an elevated risk. Now, there wouldn't be probably the scale that might be needed, but we could also then think about who would be prioritized to get a vaccine in limited quantities in hotspots. And so who would that be? We are putting our healthcare workers in on the front line of this. And so we would have to think about, is it our healthcare workers? Is it the population that's most at risk? But those are some of the kind of ethical questions that would have to be addressed, at that time. And we're going to have some ethical questions right now, and just hospital preparedness as well.
So let me ask you a question. Here's cases. Okay, I'll just give you cases. The number on how it's doubling. You've seen this before. So I got a question for you with what we're seeing with charts on assuming. These cases keep doubling, and I ran it at 4 days, 6 days, and 10 days. And this is just U.S. In 4 days, if it doubles every 4 days, we're looking at 8 million cases by May 1st, just in U.S. Let's just say that's too aggressive, 4 days. Let's take it to 6 days. 6 days, we'll be at 4 million by May 19th, okay, if it's 6 days. 4 million. That's still a big number by 519. If it doubles every 10 days, we're looking at September 4th, all of US, July 2nd, 4 million cases. If we got 4 million cases and we use the 2% number, 4 million, 2%, 80,000.
Right.
80,000 is seven times bigger than what we had with the H1V1 in 2009, 2010 mm-hmm. with Barack Obama. We had, 57 million cases? Right. I don't know the exact number, but we had quite mm-hmm. a... So if we're going this direction, okay? If we're going this direction, and we're looking at the numbers that way, it's going to double at that rate. Okay, we don't have the vaccine. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have it for 12 months to give it to people, 12 to 18 months. What are we doing there?
We have the drug.
Well, that's why I think you're putting way too much emphasis just on the vaccine solution. And that's why.
So we have the solution right now with a drug to fix it?
No, not now. You're putting way too much emphasis on a medical countermeasure as the fix right now. Because public health measures are actually tried and true. And we were talking about the community mitigation, social distancing measures. Are going to be very effective, and they're buying us some time until the antivirals or the vaccines come on.
That leads me to my next question.
So that's why what we're doing right now in the social community social distancing interventions are essential, because those numbers are kind of frightening, and you're also assuming we'll know the numbers because we have enough laboratory diagnostic capability. But that's another, we can talk about that in a minute. But you're really explaining kind of the classic rules of epidemiology and the doubling and the replication. And we are still in an exponential growth phase of what we can see, of what we've been able to
exponential
diagnose.
Exponential growth. So this is not a linear growth. It doesn't go from one case to two cases to three. It doubles and then it doubles again and then doubles again.
Yes.
That's that's what exponential means, and that's very dangerous.
Sure.
That's why there's a huge risk to this. Jerry is, and this is where we might disagree a little bit, okay? I don't think the American people in a democracy are going to show the discipline, particularly younger people, to implement. They should. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm saying that I think we're going to have trouble with it after 2 or 3 months of this.
Oh, yeah. We can't go that long. Yeah.
And if we don't have drugs that can kill the virus, by the end of that period, we're going to have trouble. So I think the most important is not to focus on the vaccine. The president is focusing on the vaccine. That, in my view, that's a mistake because it's too far into the future. The measure that's going to relieve us from, and the economy, from this the damage that's being done is these drugs that already exist. They're simply testing them to see whether they're effective against this disease. That is what is going to allow us to relax these social measures that are the thing to do now. And we need to emphasize to young people they cannot simply dismiss this and go to a bar and have fun with their friends. That does not work. It defeats the whole purpose of this.